StartupRad.io, your podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
If you're a founder chasing your first round or early stage, looking to scale resilience and traction, this conversation is for you. Meet Stefan Schubert, serial entrepreneur turned super angel, whose fund, STS Ventures, backs hidden champion tech startups in the DACH region. From building on Vista, that's an online trading website. I also do have an account. And Ligatus, to investing in Emma, we interviewed in the past, Audiobene, and Just Watch. He brings real operator DNA to early stage capital. Stay tuned. Right after this break, we'll jump into the decision that turned a founder into one of Germany's most connected seed investors. Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Joe coming to you straight from Startup Land in Cologne together with Deutsche Startups. On today's Startup Land from Cologne, we welcome Stefan Schubert as the founder of leading internet companies like Onvista and Ligatus. Stefan has more than 15 years of hands-on experience in founding, scaling, and exiting tech firms. Today, he leads STS Ventures, a Cologne-based early-stage fund known for investing $200,000 to $1 million in resilient camel startups in the pre-seed and seed phase. He's backed some of the strongest names in German startup history, Emma, Audiobene, Just Watch, and he's here to unpack the metrics, mindset, and matchmaking behind the investments that really matter. Let's welcome him. Welcome.
Thanks, Jürgen. Thanks for having me here.
Stefan, you've been both founder and investor. What's your once upon a time moment that made you leave building companies and focus on investing?
Yeah, the answer might be disappointing. It wasn't a real strategic decision. We sold our company after building it for 10 years. And then a lot of people called and said, you know, you have experience and you want to look at my company, invest in my company. And the reason is we founded Onvista in 1998, so in the very early stages of the internet era. So at that time, when we sold it in 2007, a lot of people just valued the experience we had. And so I, step by step, came into investing in startups.
Cheers. What was the thing you've seen, the ecosystem, and what were you going to disrupt there?
Yeah, I think for almost 10 years, I invested only with my own money and did that more occasionally whenever, as I said, deals came. And then after a while, I started realizing that there is a gap in the German ecosystem, which we think is what we call camels, and I think we'll talk about that later. So startups that are more have a Mittelstand, nice German word, a Mittelstand, mindset and try to build companies that are capital efficient and that try to reach profitability after a couple of years and then grow out of their cash flow. And that's something that is pretty unique in the, I would say, the European ecosystem. So our mission was to bring private equity mindset into the early stage startup world in the DACH region.
You've invested in well-known companies like our guest Emma, we'll link it somewhere here, Just Watch and Audiobene. What was the aha moment that confirmed your investment thesis there?
Well, with Emma and Audiobene and some of the others in Kaufda, I found founders who, from the beginning on, tried to generate cash. And with generating cash, I mean they had a product which they sold at a price that they had a nice margin. So every additional revenue meant additional margin, and they did that with a very efficient marketing and sales process, and you could see that the company, when it grew, would sooner or later become profitable because it scaled. And having founders that had this mindset trying to become profitable within the next 3-4 years really taught me that this is possible, because that's what we did with Onvista without thinking about it. At the time, 1998, we didn't have VCs in the German ecosystem that much. The German VC ecosystem just started at that time. And we simply didn't have VC funding and we didn't have other cash sources than our revenue. And I found later on that there's other people out there who have the same mindset and who actually managed to do that and still grow very impressively. So that was the moment when we said, okay, this might be something we can grow and we can start to scale in a larger system where we don't do just one or two investments per year, but maybe 5 to 10.
You are investing in very, very early stage pre-seed seed. How do you deal with this uncertainty, evaluating the growth potential and so on and so forth, like the camel you've been talking about? And wasn't there a better name than camel for this concept?
Well, yeah, it's always hard if you have a strategy. It's always hard describing it. And we found that the camel actually is something people understand very well. Let's define what's a camel. Camels don't eat a lot of water. Camels always have reserve on their back. Camels are very resistant and can survive in a dangerous environment for a long time. And they can still run very fast if you look at camel races. So transforming or translating that into the startup world, we found that people understand very quickly what we're looking for: capital efficiency, cost control, so that you can survive harder times. And once you have found the metrics of growing and the scalability formula, they can still grow very fast. So actually, I think a camel might be a funny picture, but it works very well. People understand it very well. Coming back to your question, this means we look at business models typically that are in a niche market. So we don't try to disrupt the auto market or the food market, because these markets are really large, but they need a lot of capital to win in there. We like companies that operate in a niche market, bring a new idea to the niche market, where there's not a lot of competition. Therefore, you have high margins. High margins mean you can afford marketing, you can afford sales processes. And you, with each sales, you generate a contribution margin that actually helps covering your costs. And what we look at in the first place is business models where we think that eventually with a total investment of something between 1 and 10 million euro, they can become profitable and grow out of their operating cash flow. And of course, we look for founders who share this vision and who are willing to build a company like this.
You typically, before we head into that, I do understand the founder who founds the next big LLM model and wants to compete with ChatGPT, they're not the right person you would talk to.
Yes, I think that's something you could say. And the reason is very simple. If you look at just taking that example, I mean, and this has been true for over 25 years now, but if we look at the current AI world, companies like Meta and OpenAI, they invest 40, 60 billion euro dollars per year into building LLMs. And I just don't think that is something we as STS Ventures and probably the entire European VC ecosystem can do. So we have to find smarter ways to build companies and make money. And yes, that's true. We wouldn't be able to look at these kind of companies. It doesn't work for us.
Just to tease you a little bit, because there was a lot of talk around town and in the blogosphere recently, how high do you think is the probability that the current AI market is a bubble?
You know, I've been in this market for 25 years now, and we could actually draw a chart and show you the topic of the year for the last 25 years. Now it's AI, LLMs. 2 years ago it was NFT, before it was blockchain, before that it was e-commerce, before that it was circularity, and then
Don't forget quick delivery.
Quick delivery, yeah, you know, so there's a new story in town every year. And that's okay, that's momentum investment, and some of these companies really grow very, very fast and become very big. But at the end, it's a very small percentage to succeed in these markets. And therefore, whenever one of these trends comes up, we tend to specifically not look at that, but look at the value that is creating behind these trends. So LLM and all these new tools we see in AI are a big change in the entire tech ecosystem. But it's just a tool. You know, 25 years ago, it was Internet, TCP, IP, and CGI bin, and nobody knew how to use it. And then we invented all kinds of languages. And I don't want to downgrade that, but at the end, it's a tool that we can use in different environments. And that's what we look at. How can we use AI and LLMs in your environments. Like, for example, we invested in one company that uses AI technology for the waste processing industry. And that's a very nice case where we think AI has a lot of value, but I don't have to create the base technology underneath, which is very, very competitive and needs a lot of cash to be successful.
Talking about being successful, you invest with STS around 200,000 to 1 million and then follow up to 5 million. What is your decision framework to decide double down or exit a startup?
Yeah, I think it's finding out the metrics that drive growth and finding out if a company or a team is able to generate growth with positive contribution margin cash flow. Once we have understood and once the team has found a way to scale, so build the engine and then scale from there with positive contribution margins, meaning, you know, you subtract your costs of goods sold, the marketing costs, the sales costs and everything. Once you find out that you have a scaling way of growing and still have a positive contribution margin, I think that's when we become excited and double down and to talk to the team if there's a way to invest more money and scale growth.
Mm-hmm. Right after the break, we'll talk about how you manage founders, investors' relations and red flags you're watching out for. How do you view the ideal relationship between founders and investors, especially in the very early seed phase? What behavior from founders excites you and what behavior actually consists, let's say, a red or an orange flag?
So immediately after investing, what we like to do is sit down with the founders and define the KPIs that we think lead to growth. And we means the founders and us. So we sit together and we discuss what will be the drivers for the next 1 or 2 years that might lead growth. And we build up a KPI system, typically a very easy BI tool, Looker Studio or something, where the team tracks these KPIs, typically on a real-time or daily basis. And every other week, we just look at these KPIs together and say, you know, is it developing in the right direction? Every once in a while, we find out those are the wrong KPIs. We have to find a different way to do sales and stuff. So people that build a number-driven company is one thing that excites us. And the other thing is, and you're often misunderstood, Camel is not a type of company. Building a Camel is a mindset. So founders that have the mindset of using these KPIs and looking at the same time at their cost structure, you know, not growth at any price, but growth at a decent cost structure, and having the mindset of fundraising is not a KPI that's exciting for them, but profitable growth isn't the KPI that's exciting for them. Those are two parameters that we really like, and where we typically, when we work with founders together, found very quickly, both the founders and us, that it works very well together. And if these things are not there, you know, we've always, every once in a while, find founders who are not really honest to us, who try to create KPIs that are very creative. So, you know, look at your company in a very honest way, talk about the things that don't work, look at the right KPIs, drive these KPIs and be capital efficient. That excites us, and the opposite does not really excite us. I wouldn't say it's a red flag, but we would definitely have a conversation then.
Looking at exits like Audiobene, Kaufda, what patterns do you observe in scaling from seed to exit? What lessons should founders absorb early?
Yeah, you know, there's one interesting thing. It's a huge difference if you raise money when you can raise money versus if you raise money because you have to raise money. So we see a lot of startups that are constantly in fundraising mode and are constantly close to running out of cash, and that generates a lot of stress for the entire company and all investors, and there's a lot of time invested in finding the next round, finding the next investors. The examples you just said, is most of these companies did not run into that situation. They They were able to grow, they were able to run their business. And then if someone came around and said, you know, I would like to invest 2 or 5 or 10 million in your company, then we could talk about the terms. And that's a total different situation, because you take money because you have ideas how you can grow faster. You have ideas how you can go in another country. And you take the money because you have found the right investor at the right situation. But you don't urgently need the money to pay the next payroll. And that has brought these founders into situations where they could invest a lot more time in building their company and outperform a lot of their competitors. I think that's something we really appreciated in these cases. And at the end, these exits were not unicorn exits, but the interesting thing is the founders had much more shares in their own companies because they didn't have that much dilution. And some of these guys became really rich without having a unicorn exit, but they simply still had 50, 60% of their company. And if you sell a company at 100, 200, 300 million euro and you own 50, 60%, that's still a lot of money. And it's more money than if you own 1% at a unicorn exit.
And that's a lot of money, even in Germany after taxes, I see. Plus, you don't have been in the spotlight all over, because if you once do a unicorn exit, I'm sure for the rest of your life, you get calls, you get emails, you get all this stuff. Do you have money? Do you want to invest?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also an advantage. And yeah. That's one other thing. If you build a profitable company, you have many, many more exit options. You know, some of these huge unicorns, there's only a few companies in the world who can buy them, or you have to do an IPO. And the IPO window is not open very often in Europe. Actually, for the last 25 years, we've seen it maybe twice that it was possible to exit fast-growing, non-profitable companies with an IPO. But if you have the other model of a company generating cash, generating EBIT, all of a sudden you have the typical strategic company, corporate, Mittelstand buyers, PEs who are interested in these kind of business models. And that opens a whole new door of exits you can proceed.
There, let's look a little bit into the future. There's some macroeconomic headwinds in there. How do you adjust your thesis, and what contrarian view do you have about the next big tech investment in the German, in the DACH market?
Yeah, I think the funny thing is we don't think we have to adjust anything, because we think this is exactly the time we were prepared for. We had a lot of questions from our investors in 2020 and 21, why they had other VCs that have 3 unicorn investments and we don't have any unicorn valuations in our portfolio. And we had to explain that, why this was the case, because some of our larger companies didn't even raise money during that time. Now I think it's the right time for our strategy. And with our portfolio, we have a lot of companies that simply don't need cash. And that's a very good situation we're in right now. And also the founders are in a very good situation to be in. So we don't adjust anything right now. And we're very happy with our positioning in the current market.
Usually we close our interviews with 2 questions. Are you open to talk to the investors, in your case, potentially LPs?
I mean, yeah, if someone likes this idea of looking at tech startups and investing and building companies, we're always interested in people who support this this ecosystem and who like our approach. Absolutely.
And also, usually we ask, are you open to talk to new talented employees?
Yes.
Yes.
Of course.
We link down here in the show notes your career website.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks, Jörn. It was a pleasure talking to you too.
That's all, folks. Find more news, streams, events, and interviews at www.startuprad.io. Remember, sharing is caring.